ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as Sean's Sports Stop, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion on the biggest news stories in sports.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop podcast. As you just heard, legendary UFC ring announcer Bruce Buffer introduced the show. That shit never gets old. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for listening, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. This is episode number 389. We are rapidly approaching the 400th episode. That is truly mind-boggling. It has been 4 years now since I started this podcast episode at the age of 14 years old. Truly mind-blowing how fast time flies. I hope everyone's doing well. Hope you guys are all having a great day, having a great life. And as always, I'm going to talk about the biggest news in sports, give my opinion on everything going on. You know the deal. Before I get into all that, I want to thank Crimson IT for sponsoring today's podcast episode. If you or someone you know by chance has a small or medium-sized company that needs managed IT services, go to crimsonit.com, tell them that you found them from the Sean Sports Stop podcast, and they'll give you a huge discount on whatever it is you're looking for. And yeah, I've been kind of slacking. I've been saying this every episode that I do, that I'm going to get back on like a consistent schedule. I have not lived up to those promises, so I apologize for that. The last episode I did was exactly 20 days ago, on the heels of Duke losing in the NCAA March Madness tournament. We are now balls deep, you could say, in the NBA playoffs, with the Brooklyn Nets down 3-0 to the Boston Celtics in the first round of the playoffs. That is astounding. The Brooklyn Nets, if I remember correctly, for pretty much the whole season, had the best odds of winning the NBA championship, according to Vegas. I mean, for most of the season, they had Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. Obviously, before the deadline, they traded Harden to Philadelphia in exchange for Ben Simmons, who was targeting a return date of Game 4 against Boston for his return. Unfortunately, I don't think that Brooklyn, Ben Simmons, and quite literally anybody, including Celtics fans, expected Boston to have a 3-0 series lead through three games of the series. I, for one, am shocked. Yes, I'm a Laker fan, but so obviously, you know, I hate the Celtics by default, but even objectively, I don't think anybody could have predicted Jason Tatum and the Celtics defense to shut down Kevin Durant the way they have. I don't think anybody could have predicted the Celtics having a 3-0 series lead. I mean, just the fact that Atlanta was able to take a game at home against Miami. I mean, yes, Boston won. Even Boston winning both games at home, my thought process was, okay, Boston did what they were supposed to do as the two seed, as a very, very good team, as a championship caliber team. So now it's Brooklyn's turn to do the same at home, and they did not. I mean, yes, the game was close. Yes, every game was close. But you can also argue that Boston has not really played a complete game yet. I mean, yes, they've won all three games so far in the playoffs in this series, but Jason Tatum said after game three last night that they need to play better, that they have not really played a complete game, and I think that that's true. Kevin Durant has been a no-show in these playoffs. Kyrie Irving was good in game one and then atrocious in games two and three. Yesterday, he was 0 of 7 from three. So it's just astounding how quickly everything has crumbled for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, no team in NBA history has ever come back from a 3-0 series deficit and won the series. It has never happened in NBA history, so there is no reason to believe that it'll happen now. That being said, if there is a team that can come back from 3-0, if there is, which I don't think there is in the NBA, especially in the modern NBA, it would potentially be a team led by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And if you have the resurgence, the return of Ben Simmons, then maybe in some galaxy far, far away, there is a chance that Brooklyn wins this series. I mean, the odds of that are so astronomically low, as I've said a few times now, that no team in NBA history has ever come back from a 3-0 series deficit. It was such a massive deal when the Cleveland Cavaliers came back from a 3-1 series deficit in the 2016 NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors. That was a Herculean effort by LeBron James. Kyrie Irving was also on that team, by the way, mind you. But still, I think 3-0 is so huge. I think Kevin Durant has lost pretty much, not lost all confidence, but he is not looking like himself. I mean, people are posting Thunderstruck memes of that movie when he swapped the abilities with some white kid. I mean, it really is crazy. And Vegas is laughing all the way to the bank because I'm not sure if Brooklyn had the, if the Brooklyn Nets had the most money on them to win the NBA championship. It would not surprise me if they did. But they had the highest odds of winning the NBA Finals, and they might get swept in the first round. That is crazy. I mean, if somebody was to tell me that the Lakers and Clippers would miss the playoffs and the Nets would be swept in the first round, I would have called them absolutely insane. I mean, that is just crazy. So Steve Nash is probably going to get fired. But how about Jason Tatum and the Celtics? They took a commanding 3-0 series lead with a 6-point win over the Brooklyn Nets last night at Barclays Center in their first round playoff series matchup. Once again, Jason Tatum was a huge reason for the Celtics as he finished with 39 points on 13 of 29 shooting. So he didn't shoot that well, but he still had 39 points, 4 of 13 from 3. So not that great from 3 either, but he had 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and a playoff career high, 6 steals. That is nuts. It's the first 35-5-5 playoff game by a Celtic in the last 40 years. Jason Tatum has once again proven himself to be a generational talent. He is a superstar. There is no doubt about it. What Jaylen Brown is doing should not be ignored as well. He is huge for the Celtics. Marcus Smart, that whole team is looking like a very well-oiled machine. Peyton Pritchard, Al Horford. I mean, as much as I hate the Celtics as a Laker fan, I have to give credit where credit is due. They are looking like a legitimate championship team. But this is nothing new for Jason Tatum, who has significantly elevated his game this season. The 3-time All-Star averaged 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 4.5 assists during the season, while shooting 45% from the floor and 35% from deep. In Game 1 against the Nets, he finished with 31 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks, including a game-winning buzzer-beater layup. I mean, in hindsight, how big was that game? I mean, that buzzer-beater, that was the first playoff buzzer beater in Celtics history, which is insane. And it was the first Celtics buzzer beater of any kind in 12 years, the last of which was done by Paul Pierce. That was such a huge moment for the Celtics. If not for that crazy spin move buzzer beater layup, the Nets have a 1-0 series lead. And the whole landscape of the entire series, of the entire playoffs, of the entire NBA season, all the narratives are completely different if that layup doesn't go down. It's a crazy butterfly effect, domino effect, whatever you want to call it, slippery slope. Tatum and the Celtics will look to keep the momentum going and close out their first round series against the Nets in Game 4 on Monday. I mean, it's hard not to back them now. I mean, on one hand, I'm conflicted at this point because on one hand, obviously, Brooklyn doesn't want to get swept. But on the other hand, I don't think they really want to lose the series in Boston either. So it's just tough. But from a mental standpoint, yes. The fact that no team has ever come back from a 3-0 series deficit is, I would imagine it to be daunting and kind of just, you know, you feel like there's no chance. But if you think about it, Brooklyn has to win 4 games in a row, which is obviously incredibly challenging to do against the same opponent, especially when you lost the first 3 in a row. But when you look at it from that perspective of, all right, all we have to do is take it 1 game at a time, 1 possession at a time. We have to win 4 games in a row, backs against the wall. So, you know, I think it's doable. Like I said, in some galaxy far, far away, there is a potential possibility of that happening. Will it happen? Almost surely not. But games are not played on paper. Championships are not determined on paper. The games still need to be played. Game 4 is tomorrow. We'll see how it all goes down. Let's switch gears to some football. Football fans will get a full day of NFL games on Christmas for the first time ever. The NFL perhaps rivaling the NBA with a slate of Christmas games. The NFL will have 3 games on December 25th, according to the Associated Press. There will be 2 afternoon games, which will be broadcast on CBS and Fox and a primetime game on NBC. Quote, Christmas, when it falls on an NFL game day, we've had a lot of success there. All due respect to our friends at the NBA. It is something that our friends are interested in, NFL Vice President of Broadcasting Mike North said during an appearance on the Sal Capaccio's podcast. If Christmas falls on a Sunday, it makes perfect sense, and I absolutely agree with Mr. North. He also said on the podcast that the NFL would play at least two or three games on Christmas in 2023 because it falls on a Monday. In 2024, Christmas will be on a Wednesday, and North noted that it is unlikely that the NFL will schedule a midweek game. Quote, I'm not sure we're going to play on Wednesday, he said, according to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, but when we play on Christmas, we will. When we can play on Christmas, we will. The NFL has played on Christmas for the past 3 years. Last year, the Green Bay Packers defeated the Cleveland Browns 24-22. The matchup averaged 28.6 million viewers on Fox, according to the Associated Press. The Colts and Cardinals also met on Christmas during the 2021 season, with Indianapolis defeating Arizona 22-16, which averaged a significantly less 12.6 million on NFL Network. The NFL's decision to play games on Christmas helps it rival the NBA, which has played on December 25th since 1947. The 2021-22 season featured five NBA games on Christmas on ESPN and ABC. According to Sports Business Journal, those five games averaged 4.1 million viewers, the lowest since ESPN acquired the NBA's broadcasting rights in 2002. However, it should be noted that this year's NBA playoffs have had the highest ratings so far in recent years. Speaking of the NBA, as I'm sure you're not surprised, we have more basketball to talk about. Miami Heat veteran point guard Kyle Lowry was ruled out for the remainder of Game 3 of the team's first-round playoff series against the Atlanta Hawks after suffering a left leg injury in the third quarter. Head coach Eric Spoelstra told reporters after the Heat's loss that Lowry is dealing with a hamstring injury and will undergo tests on Saturday to determine the severity. He had 6 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists before leaving the game. He's 36 years old now, so he's not a spring chicken by any means, but he's generally avoided injury issues this season, though he did miss some time earlier in the year after being placed in the NBA's COVID-19 health and safety protocols, the infamous health and safety protocols. When on the court, Lowry has averaged 13.5 points and 7.5 assists per game during the season, shooting 44% from the floor and almost 38% from three. So he's been a solid, very solid role player for the Miami Heat. Quote, it was the right situation, it was the right fit. Lowry told the undefeated Mark J. Spears when asked why he chose to sign with the Heat ahead of this season, and they had a need for someone like me in the sense of style of play, individually, how I move and how I operate. They also had talent in Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, and P.J. Tucker. The Heat have had to battle through a multitude of injuries this season to multiple key players, and like most teams around the NBA, have not been immune to the COVID-19 pandemic, though they weathered those storms to the tune of a 53-29 record and the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So the Heat, you know, are fine. But it's big for Lowry to get back. Let's switch gears to some more injuries. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of injuries. I looked at someone made a funny tweet about the NBA playoffs is all injured team, and it's a good team. I mean, you got I don't remember it exactly, but you got Lonzo Ball, Chris Middleton, now Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry. Who else do we have? Jamal Murray. I mean, that's Robert Williams, who came back. That's a very, very solid team. The Toronto Raptors uphill climb in their first round playoff series against the Philadelphia 76ers perhaps got even more difficult on Saturday with an injury to guard Fred VanVleet. According to The Athletic, VanVleet was ruled out for the remainder of Saturday's Game 4 during the second half because of a left hip strain. Entering Saturday's game, the fifth-seeded Raptors trailed the number 4 Sixers 3-0 in the series. Prior to getting knocked out of Game 4, VanVleet had scored 5 points on 2 of 6 shooting to go along with 3 assists and 2 rebounds in 15 minutes of play. His exit placed even greater emphasis on backcourt mate Gary Trent Jr., as well as the likes of OG Anunoby and Rookie of the Year Scottie Barnes. Despite going undrafted out of Wichita State, FVV has developed into a key player for the Raptors over the years and set career highs in most major categories this season. In 65 games, the 28-year-old has averaged 20 points, 7 assists, 4.5 rebounds, and 4 threes made, all of which were career highs. So definitely a career year for Fred VanVleet. He also played great defense with almost 2 steals a game. As a result, he was named an All-Star, making him one of only 5 undrafted players to become All-Stars, to become an All-Star in NBA history. Even before the season, VanVleet's importance to the Raptors was obvious, as he helped Toronto win a championship in 2019 and then took on an even greater role after Kawhi Leonard left for the Clippers in free agency. So this is a big loss for the Raptors, but let's be honest, they probably wouldn't have won this. I mean, they were down 3-0. Yes, they won game 4. They're now down 3-1 going back to Philadelphia, but this series is as good as over. Let's be honest, Joel Embiid and James Harden are going to advance to the conference semifinals. Unfortunate for the Raptors that they had a tough first-round matchup. Let's transition to some baseball. Chicago White Sox left fielder Eloy Jimenez was carted off the field in the second inning of Saturday's game against the Minnesota Twins with an apparent leg injury, according to ESPN. Jimenez suffered the injury while running through first base after grounding out to third. Manager Tony La Russa, who I'm shocked is still alive, let alone being an MLB manager, told reporters after the game that the injury is, quote, significant, but not season-ending. He added that Jimenez is quite distraught. According to MLB Network's John Heyman, Jimenez suffered a right hamstring tear. The tweet reads, quote, Eloy Jimenez's initial diagnosis is right hamstring tear, also sometimes called strain. White Sox are only saying hamstring injury is significant until their own docs see him. Tony La Russa did say they expected him to miss less time than he missed with pec injury last year. So unfortunate, it seems like he can't catch a break with the old injury bug. The 25-year-old entered Saturday slashing .229, .263, .343 with 1 home run and 7 RBIs. The Dominican Republic native played in only 55 games last season after rupturing his left pectoral tendon during spring training. He did not make his season debut until July 26th. If the 2020 Silver Slugger misses time, Andrew Vaughn, Lurie Garcia, and Adam Engel could fill in. The White Sox cannot catch a break when it comes to injuries. Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, Garrett Crochet, Joe Kelly, Ryan Burr, AJ Pollock, Johan Moncada, and Yermán Mercedes have all been placed on the 10-day injured list this month. That is a huge number of players. Luckily for Chicago, it's just the beginning of the season. The White Sox entered Saturday second in the American League Central with a 6-7 record. The Cleveland Guardians were in first with a slightly better, but yeah, division leading 7-6 record. If the White Sox can get some of their injured players back soon, they'll be in a much better position to compete for the top spot in the division. And I think the White Sox, when it's going to be all said and done, will still win the division. I briefly mentioned that Scotty Barnes won the Rookie of the Year. Let's get a little more in depth with it. Toronto Raptors forward Scotty Barnes is reportedly set to be named the 2021-22 NBA Rookie of the Year. No, he already won it. Shams Charania of The Athletic and Stadium reported Saturday that Barnes won the award over Cleveland Cavaliers center Evan Mobley and Detroit Pistons guard Cade Cunningham. NBA insider Mark Stein tweeted the voting point totals with Barnes edging Mobley 378 to 363, followed by Cade Cunningham with 153. Barnes was the number 4 overall pick in the 2021 draft out of Florida State, and he played a huge role in getting the Raptors into the playoffs at the 5 seed. Defensive brilliance was a hallmark of both Mobley and Barnes, with the latter emerging as a ball-stopping perimeter menace. Barnes was also sometimes given the task of defending the opposing team's best perimeter player defender, despite the Raptors being loaded with defensive-minded rangy wings like Pascal Siakam, for example. So well-deserved for Scotty Barnes. Looking forward to seeing what he can do in the future. Let's switch gears to some boxing. What a show this was. The Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, improves to 32-0-1 with 23 knockouts. He turned an ugly fight into a testament to his boxing ability with one punch Saturday night, knocking out Dillian White, who falls to 28-3 with 19 knockouts himself. In the 6th round, with a right uppercut to retain the WBC World Heavyweight Championship in front of 94,000 people at Wembley Stadium in London. And I thought, when I first heard this, as far as the crowd, that it was a record for a boxing crowd. Apparently, there have been multiple instances, especially in the United States, at Soldier Field with the likes of Jack Dempsey in the 1930s and 40s, fighting in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Julio Cesar Chavez also fought in front of over 100,000 people in Mexico in the early 1990s. So despite 94,000 being a massive number of people and the record for a European boxing crowd, it is not the largest crowd of all time. The highly anticipated bout was a rough and tumble brawl for the most part, with fouls committed on both sides. Fury was in control throughout, however, boxing well from the outside when he was able to get separation from White. He ended the one-sided affair in style, connecting with a haymaker that White could not recover from. It was the exact same punch that Alexander Povetkin knocked out Dillian White with. Dillian White cannot win a boxing match in which he's taking backward steps. Fury is too long and savvy. It's that simple. This is Fury's second successful defense of the WBC World Heavyweight title that he won from Deontay Wilder in February 2020. He also maintains his claim as the lineal heavyweight champion, which is kind of an unofficial championship as the man who beat the man who beat the man. The previous so-called man before Tyson Fury was Vladimir Klitschko, who Fury beat in 2015. After the fight, Fury suggested that he's ready to retire, saying, quote, "This might be the final curtain for the Gypsy King," per the pay-per-view broadcast. If this is indeed Fury's final fight, it's a fine way to go out. The 33-year-old showed that he is on another level entirely from Dillian White, who was the mandatory challenger for the WBC belt. Dillian White is 34 years old now. He's been the mandatory challenger since 2017. He finally got a shot in 2022. He waited 5 years as the mandatory challenger. Didn't take advantage of the opportunity, but I mean, it's just a different level. Tyson Fury is just on a different level from every heavyweight there is. He's 6'9", 270, moves like he fights at 170, 150. I mean, he is truly a freak of nature, a true specimen. But what I find most impressive about Tyson Fury is that after beating Vladimir Klitschko in 2015, he was on top of the world. Unfortunately, there was no goal after that. So he fell into a depression. He ballooned to 400 pounds, started abusing substances, he was in a terrible space, wanted to commit suicide, tried to commit suicide, as a matter of fact, one time in his Ferrari. And he was able to work his way all the way back to the top. So that is truly admirable. He's a true inspiration, in my opinion. Do I think this is Fury's last fight? No, I don't. Based on his post-fight press conference, it seems to me that his wife, Paris Fury, wants him to retire, which I don't blame her. I mean, your husband's been fighting for many, many years now. She thinks it's time to wind down. I don't blame her at all. By no means. Tyson, on the other hand, I don't think he's quite yet done. I think there are some huge fights to be made, potentially with Anthony Joshua or Alexander Usyk. They had Francis Ngannou in the ring yesterday, so that's been heavily rumored for some time now. That would be fascinating, whether it's with boxing gloves, UFC gloves, boxing or MMA. That would be fascinating to watch. Very much looking forward to it, and I think that fight will happen. I just think it won't be a professionally sanctioned fight. It'll probably be more of a kind of exhibition / show. Let's switch gears to some more playoff basketball. Donovan Mitchell is downplaying any notion that he and Rudy Gobert are unable to coexist on the court after the Utah Jazz's 100-99 victory over the Dallas Mavericks in Game 4 of the Western Conference playoffs. I mean, what a monumental win it was for the Jazz. Absolutely saved their season. There's such a massive difference between going down 3-1, going to back to Dallas for Game 5, as opposed to tying the series up at 2. Dallas was up by like 5 points with like 40 seconds left or something along those lines. I was watching the game, and they had a win expectancy of 88%. But despite that, Donovan Mitchell had a 3-point play, and then a lob to Rudy Gobert, quick 5 points, and they were able... And that, coupled with Dwight Powell on the Mavericks missing both of his free throws, they were able to squeak through with a 1-point victory in Game 4. Speaking to reporters after the game, Mitchell said he and Gobert, quote, trust each other. Much has been made of the dynamic between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert on the court. It became a significant talking point on April 3rd when a stat was posted on Twitter showing how many times Mitchell has passed the ball to Gobert this season. Apparently, Joe Ingles has passed the ball to Rudy Gobert 174 times this season. This is as of April 3rd. Donovan Mitchell has passed the ball to Rudy Gobert 151 times this year. So that, I'm not no mathematician, although I am in a statistics class, which I am struggling in heavily. But if we do 174 minus 151, that shows us that Joe Ingles passed the ball to Rudy Gobert 23 more times than Donovan Mitchell did, despite the fact that Joe Ingles tore his ACL over 2 months ago. So that is a shocking stat. But at the when push came to shove, and the season was on the line. Donovan Mitchell threw a lob to Rudy Gobert with nobody in sight that Rudy easily slammed home and sealed a one-point victory for the Jazz. When asked about the stat on April 5th, Mitchell told reporters it is, quote, a wild number, but pointed out the Jazz have the NBA's best offense, quote, so clearly we're doing something right as a group, as a team. I think that's a very valid point from Donovan Mitchell. The Jazz did finish the season leading the league in offensive rating at 116.7 per Basketball Reference. Head coach Quinn Snyder defended his players in a long rant during a pregame press conference on April 5th, saying, quote, let's just not try to drive a wedge between some of these players, and especially using numbers. We should be more responsible than that. We're not playing great all the time. We want to play better, but you don't get there by trying to say that one player is not passing to another. Absolute truth from Quinn Snyder here. I really wish that this gentleman will be the future coach of the Lakers. Do I think that'll happen? Why would he leave a seemingly more solid team in the Utah Jazz to a dumpster fire that is the Los Angeles Lakers? But as a Laker fan, one can dream. So a big win for the Jazz. Game 5 is obviously extremely, extremely pivotal. Here's some big news. Philadelphia 76ers superstar Joel Embiid will wait until the offseason to undergo surgery to repair the torn ligament in his thumb, according to Woj of ESPN. Embiid played through the injury in Saturday's 8-point loss to the Raptors, finishing with 21 points and 8 rebounds. Philadelphia, as mentioned earlier, still holds a 3-1 lead in the series. The NBA MVP finalist averaged a league-high 30.6 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.5 blocks per game during the season. He was particularly dominant down the stretch with 36.5 points per game in his final 8 games. Thanks largely to his efforts, the Sixers finished with the joint second-best record in the East with a 51-31 record. So, very admirable from Joel. And let's switch gears to some more Brooklyn Nets drama. Despite reports that Brooklyn Nets guard Ben Simmons will return to the court for Monday's game against the Boston Celtics, head coach Steve Nash could not confirm the plan, saying, quote, I have no idea, Nash said after Sunday's practice. I think it just really depends hour to hour how he improves and where he's at. Simmons initially called Game 4 a reasonable target for his return from a back injury, while ESPN's Woj reported he plans to play, quote, barring a setback. Was it considered that a 3-0 series deficit is a potential setback for Ben Simmons? I mean, it's interesting to see how the goalposts have been moved, because early in the series, it was all but confirmed that Ben Simmons will be back for Game 3, and if not Game 3, then Game 4 pretty much at the latest for the Nets. Now, with Brooklyn down 3-0 in the series and no team ever coming back from a 3-0 series deficit, all of a sudden, Steve Nash can't confirm that Ben Simmons will be back. I find that very interesting. On Sunday, Nash called it a, quote, unique situation and said it's up to the player to make the call. It definitely is a unique situation. This whole Ben Simmons soap opera has definitely been unique. Quote, part of the decision has to be Ben's, the coach said. I think that he has to be all in. Interesting. Simmons has not appeared in a game all season and has yet to play for the Nets. So I'm not going to go into the details about what happened with him and the Sixers. We all know. I mean, I've talked about it extensively. Oh, there it is. As of 14 minutes ago, Ben Simmons is out for Game 4. Unbelievable, this guy. What a guy. He's getting paid millions of dollars to not play basketball, to pull up in orange sunglasses and orange sweatpants, purple jackets, sit courtside, watch the games, fuck around, and get paid millions for it. Man is really living the dream. On that note, we are living the dream. You guys are living the dream. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Sean Sports Podcast. I really appreciate it. And follow at Lenny's Picks on Instagram for the best sports picks. Last week, I hit an 8-leg parlay back-to-back days. As crazy as it sounds, it really did happen. Although I have been slacking lately, much like I have been with this podcast, with this great podcast, the best podcast in the world, much like that, I have also been slacking with the picks. I'm going to get back to it tomorrow. Appreciate you guys so much. And yeah, what else do we got? Lenny's Sports Gambling Podcast, got to start that up again. I've done one episode so far. And yeah, I went to the LA Kings game. If you're still listening, you're a real G. I went to the LA Kings game yesterday, a 4-2 win over the Ducks. It was great. Had some money on Kings -1.5. They pulled through. They're now all but guaranteed to make the playoffs. Again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you guys on the next one. Mamba out.